Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pop That Mama podcast. In this episode, I am joined with CJ, who is a hormonal expert who's come on the podcast to talk to us about all things trying to conceive. Get yourself comfortable and enjoy. CJ, I'm so excited to have you on. I know that we've connected through social media. You've been doing my birth box course and you're now in that strange place of waiting for baby to arrive. But I'm really looking forward to getting into the detail of trying to conceive, because I think it could just be such a weird space to be in. And I know for myself, I went to Google a lot for answers, and often there were different views on things. So I'm so excited to just ask you those kind of questions that I guess most people trying to conceive are asking themselves or Google. So tell us, who are you and why should people trying to conceive listen to this episode?
Thanks, Poppy. I'm so excited as well. So I'm CJ and I am a certified hormone health coach. And I was told that I would never be able to have children. And that was because I had a diagnosis of PCOS, which I think people know a lot more about these days, but it's very common. And I was finding that I was being bandied around by doctors and just kept being told, no, you can't have this and no, you can't have that. And you just need to stay on the pill. And I knew that there was more than that. I just wouldn't accept it. And so I've started this journey of becoming certified in hormones. And I'm also training as a nutritional therapist because I'm just so passionate about how well all this stuff works. And I think it's really important. And I'm really glad that I get to talk about this with you, because even though our medical system and the NHS is so amazing in so many ways, the thing that I keep coming up against or kept coming up against at the time was that actually a lot of GPs I was seeing and specialists I was seeing didn't really know anything about women's hormones, didn't really know anything about our cycles, and absolutely nothing about nutrition. I found that there was a huge gap. So I hope that this gives you a few answers and a little bit more insight as to what you can start doing.
Wow. Well, congratulations on your baby. That's amazing. When did you get into this line of work?
So I've been practicing for 3 years, and I think it's been like the best thing I've ever done. I've worked with a lot of people who are trying to conceive, a lot of people who have really bad period problems like PCOS or very bad period pains, and also people postpartum. It's really interesting to see how, even though all these life stages are so different, that actually the things you can do to help and support your hormones and your fertility, et cetera, and coming back after having a baby are very, very similar. So I'm really excited to talk through them all, because there's things you can use for the rest of your life, basically.
I was looking at your Instagram and it's so varied. Like, there's so much on there. You know, you talk about periods, the ovulatory cycle, and there's a whole wealth of, you know, valuable tips and posts. So definitely check it out, guys. For anyone trying to conceive, what is the most important thing for them to get educated on?
Definitely your menstrual cycle, or, you know, your period. I have a number of friends and clients who are, you know, in the midst of trying to conceive at the moment. And the thing that just comes up again and again and again is how little we actually know about our periods and our bodies and our systems. And, you know, I was thinking back to when we were at school and having, you know, PSHE or whatever those classes are called. And, you know, you just get told, like, it's like the Mean Girls episode where they're like, don't have sex or you will die. Or like, you just shouldn't do this thing. It's bad. You will get pregnant immediately. And a lot of us get put on contraception or choose to go on contraception when we're really, really young. So we kind of get put into this false pattern, like a pill packet, for example, where you've got 28 days and you have a bleed and you think you're having a period, and that's all you care about. Am I going to have my period when I'm on holiday or not? And am I not going to be pregnant when I don't want to be? Yeah, learning about your menstrual cycle is absolutely vital. And then on top of that, what the signs of ovulation are. Another thing that, you know, I'm seeing in some of my clients and friends is they're like, oh, I've got this app and it's telling me I'm ovulating on this day. But actually, there's so much your body can tell you. For example, you know, cervical mucus, which a lot of people think is just really gross and they just don't really know what it is. The position of your cervix and your body temperature, all of those things can tell you when you're able to get pregnant. Those are probably the most important. And then like your own like body and your health. And one of the things I always recommend when people first start trying to conceive is just looking at whether you're deficient in any nutrients, because so many people are. Getting your thyroid tested, which is a massive, massive issue, when it, especially when it comes to miscarriage. And that's something that often comes up as a problem, and your gut health as well. So they're all really inextricably linked. And people just kind of have this thing about thinking it's just about my ovaries, you know, my period, and that's all that matters. It's actually a full body thing, you know. I could go on. There's so many things.
Oh, well, I definitely want to ask you about the signs of ovulation. So obviously you said cervical mucus. From, let's say, you finished your period, at which point can you track your cervical mucus, and how should you do it? Because I've heard there's different ways, like wipe a tissue or use your hands. Like, how should you do it? What should people look out for? And when do you know you're ovulating? And when should you start having intercourse?
So usually about 2 weeks-ish, more or less, after you've finished your period, depending on how long your cycle is. So, I mean, that's quite vague, but it's just worth saying it's in the middle of your cycle. You will start to get a little bit either in your pants or like when you go to the toilet and wipe, you know, sometimes if you're like having sex with your partner, you'll be aware that you're a little bit more lubricated than perhaps you might be, you know, the week before. And you might notice that you kind of got a bit of an egg whitey kind of texture that sort of come out of you. And that is so, so important. That is a cervical mucus, and that is a massive sign of ovulation. And it's an amazing, amazing fluid. And I really encourage you to kind of like look into it and kind of like give it the value it deserves, because the point of it is that it actually takes up the sperm from your partner or donor or whatever. And it actually helps your sperm to swim up into your cervical canal and basically aids implantation. So it's really, really important, and you should be quite excited when you see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I got fascinated by my cervical mucus when trying to conceive. I found it so empowering as well to like really understand my body. And I figured out that I was ovulating way earlier than the app was telling me. And in fact, I got the ovulation sticks just to prove that that was happening, and I was ovulating on like day 10, which is really interesting. And yeah, I guess anyone who's like, oh, I don't really want to touch that, or you could just literally wipe a tissue and then don't you take it, and then you kind of put it between your fingers, and then if it stretches, that is also a sign. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, it's kind of like egg white. But to be honest, like I don't think you necessarily need to touch it. You'll know. Like you'll after a few cycles, you'll instinctively know. If you do want to get more hands-on, the other thing is your cervical position. And you might be able to feel this again when you're having sex. Like sometimes it might feel like your partner is sort of touching you inside in a different way, but you can feel this with your fingers as well. So your cervix actually moves down to help the sperm get into the right place at the right time more easily alongside the cervical mucus. So it's pretty cool how it all works. It's amazing.
It is. And you hear all these funny things like, okay, so you've tracked your cervical mucus, you know that it's all the right conditions. And you hear things like, right, do a handstand or sit or lie still for at least 15 minutes. What are your views on that?
I honestly don't think it makes a difference. You know, the way that sperm is literally ejected into you is really powerful. And if your cervical mucus is, you know, healthy and there, that is exactly what will help, like literally take it up. It's a bit like going into a downstream in a river, you know what I mean? It just goes straight up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it makes you feel better, you can do it. If you want to just put your legs up the wall for a bit, it's quite relaxing as well.
Yeah. My friend, who's quite like, she's such a planner, and she did all of this, like handstands, the works. So let's talk a bit about trying to find out if you're ovulating. It's obviously cervical mucus, and then ovulation strips. How reliable are they? And what are the benefits and risks of using ovulation strips?
Well, I can actually talk from the heart on this one a bit, because I bought tons of ovulation strips because, like I said, I was told I wouldn't get pregnant, and I have PCOS, which basically means that I don't ovulate efficiently. So for me, this was something where I was like, oh, okay, I've got to get this. I bought hundreds of the bloody things. I bought so many of them. I spent a lot of money on the really expensive ones, and I never had a positive test, not once. Your body knows what to do. Your body will give you the signs. You know, all these sort of gizmos and gadgets and stuff don't necessarily help, and they can cause a lot of anxiety. And anxiety is, you know, as much as possible something that you want to avoid when you're trying to conceive. So, you know, you might be somebody that it works really well for, and that's great. But if it's not coming up for you, it never came up for me, like I said, you know, just listen to your body in other ways, and, you know, you can save your pounds at the same time.
Absolutely. I used them for, I think it was one cycle when we conceived the pregnancy that we lost. And I said, I'm never doing that again. It was so stressful. It was like, obviously, when you start seeing the faint line, the recommendation is to start having intercourse. So I was literally like showing Tom the stick and being like, it's the faint line. So do you want to? And it was just like, killed the passion. I remember once I knocked on his door, and he had like 10 minutes before the meeting. I'm like, I just looked at him. I was like, there's a line. Like, what do you want to do about it? Like, there's a line. And he's like, I've got 10 minutes before the meeting. I'm like, 10 minutes is enough. How unromantic is that? Chatting about what we're going to have for dinner. But then afterwards, I was like, I'm never doing that again. I'm never having like that sort of planned intercourse. And then I started reading a book all about trying to conceive. And I read a line that says, making a baby should be fun and exciting. And yeah. Suddenly I had that switch where I was like, oh my God, like, we're making a baby. We should be making love. We should be having fun. So I just said, because before he was like, well, tell me the window then. You need to tell me the window. And I was like, I'm not going to tell you the window. I'm going to show you, like, I'm just going to take a little photo while, you know, send you a photo while you're at work. So then we started having fun with it, you know, and that's actually when we then conceived the one that we lost. Yeah. It was that cycle where we just said, let's not do the strips and let go. And often people say that, don't they? There's like this thing that people say where you either give up, or there's also another one where you go and go through the adoption process. Apparently that is also, yeah, I guess it's that thing of letting go of control.
Yeah, the pressure's kind of off. And I guess I had that experience myself. I just thought, well, this isn't going to work. So let's just see what happens. And I just didn't, I honestly, when I got the positive test, I was absolutely shocked. I could not believe it. So yeah, like, it's so important not to, you know, put too much pressure on it. And it can take, you know, a couple of years for people to get pregnant. I think that's, you know, going back to that kind of Mean Girls reference, it's the same. It doesn't happen like bam overnight. Mm-hmm. There's so many factors that contribute to that.
What about birth control? Does that affect fertility?
My favorite question. Yes, I'd say it does. And, you know, some people won't like to hear that, but I'm adamant that it does. And I actually refused to take it because it made me feel so terrible. But I work with a lot of people who've been freezing their eggs, for example, and, you know, going through IVF. And the thing that I definitely notice is when people come off the pill or the coil, that people expect that it's going to happen straight away, because that's what we've been, you know, like I've mentioned, like, kind of tuned into hearing. But actually, there's something called post-birth control syndrome, which is actually really prevalent. And so if you're somebody that you come off the pill and you suddenly feel absolutely terrible, and you might have come off it before because you just thought, I just want to see what my periods are like, it's actually because it depletes us of a lot of nutrients, because we metabolize differently when we're on the pill. So that's why some people will gain weight or lose weight or change the way they look even. So nutrient deficiencies, it really affects your thyroid that I mentioned before, which is one of your master hormone glands. And it can shrink your ovaries by 50% if you've been on it for a long time.
Why is this not known?
Yeah, it's really awful. I mean, if you actually look at the side effects packets and, you know, start digging into it, you will find that, you know, risk of depression, migraines, like infertility, weight loss, so many things come up that we are not told when we often get pushed into taking birth control. So it's really worth knowing that it can take 2 years to recover from the effect of birth control. And so often you might, you know, I've got some colleagues I've worked with in the past, for example, that have had their first baby by IVF, and then they've been able to conceive naturally, maybe the second or third time. And that is, some people believe, because they haven't gone back onto birth control, perhaps between children, and they've managed to recover from the effects of birth control in that time.
Wow. I mean, it's shocking, but it's also not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm someone listening that has been on birth control and has just gone off it. And I'm now in that position of trying to conceive. I've just heard you say that. What would you say to them that is reassuring?
I would say that you can get your cycles back, and just, you know, you might not get your period for a while. That's another thing that happens, and you might get strange spotting. Just start to track them, just start to kind of tune in. Again, like, get tested for nutrient deficiencies, like, you know, straight away. It's quite easy to do. You can do it either for free with the GP, or you can get at home tests, and then you can start taking like prenatal vitamins, which are, you know, really good for just kind of building everything up. And then also looking at your diet, making sure that you're intaking enough protein is something that I see so many women deficient in. And I bang on about that for my entire life. And, you know, a diverse diet, lots of omega-3s, those kind of things, to like literally make your eggs and ovaries recover and kind of blossom and get back to their, you know, original health. So you can reverse it. So don't worry about that. But it just takes a bit of time and a bit of care and knowledge.
You know, if I'd been on birth control and I was trying, and I listened to that, I would genuinely think, well, there you go. That might be a possible reason, at least. So knowledge is power, even though it might not be what you want to hear. And then would you say go for a fertility test? Or
I think one of the things that people are really, really fixated on is the number of eggs that they have. And that seems to be one of the main things that's tested by fertility tests at the moment. So AMH, I'm sure that lots of people have like tested their AMH and they'll say it's high, it's low, it's I don't have enough eggs. Da, da, da. It's actually the quality of the egg that is more important than the quantity of them. And it can take 3 months for you to, you know, if you change the way you eat and you start taking the right supplements and you start looking after yourself in the right way, it takes around 3 months for your ovaries to kind of respond to that. And also, I really want to just press this point as well, is that men as well also need to have good sperm health. It is not just you as the woman, you know, if you're in a heterosexual couple, it's really important that both you and your partner are working on your nutrition, are working on your health, because it also takes about, I think they say, 74 to 76 days for sperm health to improve as well.
Yes, yes. I did look into that because I was like, Tom, stop drinking. Stop doing this. It's not just me. So yeah, what about things like alcohol and caffeine? Obviously, a lot of people do like to drink coffee and have the odd glass of wine. So when you're trying to conceive, what's the advice there?
I am a firm believer that like alcohol has no benefit, to be honest. I do sometimes drink, well, not anymore, but I do sometimes drink. But when I really wanted to conceive, I stopped drinking at least 18 months prior. I'd have the occasional glass, but other than that, because what's really important is that your estrogen and your progesterone are balanced properly to conceive and also feel good during your menstrual cycle. And one glass of wine can increase your estrogen by around 10%, which means that your progesterone, which is a hormone you need to help keep the baby implanted, will be off balance, and then it can negatively affect your chances of conceiving. So that's my kind of view on alcohol. Caffeine, I've actually had one cup of coffee every day since I started. I just really love it. And I think there's an element of not putting too much stress on yourself, you know, and taking away too much of the things that you, or too many of the things that you do enjoy. So you can have a cup of coffee. Unless you're somebody that it makes you anxious and jittery, then I would just avoid it. to be honest with you.
I think just applying some common sense, like, you know, when you drink too much, you feel rotten. So when you feel rotten, it means that your body's feeling rotten, right? And that's not going to be an optimum place for a conception to happen. I mean, it does, because obviously we know that people get pregnant all the time, like drinking. And I didn't know I was pregnant and I accidentally had a few drinks. I don't even usually drink, so it's bizarre that it was that particular time. And I know a lot of people do, so I don't want anyone to get scared, because we all know that's not going to be good as well. But it's just that being excessive and drinking loads when you're trying to conceive is just obviously not going to be great. What about stress? How can stress affect fertility?
So this is one of the biggest issues that I see most often. Like I mentioned, I've worked with a few people freezing their eggs recently. And, you know, one of them said to me, "Oh, I'm taking the week off just before I have my surgery, so I won't be stressed when they come out." And I said, "No, we need to work on the stress, you know, months before. You know, we really need to just try and tune into your body." And it basically can stop you ovulating if you're too stressed. If your body doesn't feel safe, it either won't ovulate or it won't build the uterine lining that helps the egg implant. Because if your body doesn't feel safe, it doesn't want to necessarily bring another child into the world, because it's not safe for the baby and it's not safe for a new human. So it's really, really important that we look after ourselves in this department. And I don't just mean like stress from work as well. It's like, if you're somebody who does intense physical exercise, you know, every day, if you're not eating enough, that's stressful on your body, being deficient in nutrients. And maybe if you already have an underlying infection or a health issue that you haven't addressed in the past, those kind of things cause stress on your body too. So it's worth just kind of giving yourself a bit of an MOT before you start trying.
Again, it just makes so much sense, doesn't it? Our bodies are so clever. And yeah, our bodies don't want to bring babies into this world if there's going to be potential harm or stress. And again, our bodies don't know the difference between a cortisol spike because you've had a stressful meeting or a cortisol spike because there's a wild animal trying to chase you down. So I spoke to an athlete just yesterday actually about this, and she said that she stopped having periods when she was in her athletic career in that stage. And then when she wanted to conceive, they had to like stop exercising and really work on it.
I think, you know, you don't necessarily have to stop exercise. It's important to continue exercising.
Or the vigorous. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're doing like a HIIT class twice a day, every day, then that's probably not great. Or if you, you know, maybe start training for a marathon, something like that, that can make a difference. But, you know, walking's brilliant. Yoga's brilliant. Pilates, weightlifting is fantastic if you have something like PCOS or insulin and blood sugar problems. Those are really good types of exercise.
Okay, let's say someone falls pregnant. I think, especially when it's been a long time, you've been trying to conceive, there's a lot of anxiety around that critical 12-week period. What can we do in that 12-week period to give ourselves the best chances of having a healthy pregnancy?
So definitely maintain any sort of stress-relieving practices that you have. I would say try and live your life really as normally as possible. But some of the things that I would recommend are just keeping your stress in check, you know, doing nice like breath work. I'm a massive fan of yoga. Getting outside is so important, you know, getting the vitamin D as well. It's so, so important. And also making sure that you're actually eating enough food. You know, you don't want to eat for two. That whole thing is also a bit of rubbish, but you want to make sure that you're nourishing yourself enough. And it takes about 10 to 14% more nutrients than you would consume on average to create and build a baby. So it's really worth just making sure that your diet's really healthy. And again, protein is so important. So protein basically is the building blocks of everything in your body. And if you are not eating enough protein, it can be plant-based, it can be animal-based, it doesn't matter where it comes from. That is literally what is building your baby. It also makes you feel much less anxious when you're eating enough protein. I've worked with a lot of people that we start balancing their blood sugar and then they start eating more protein and suddenly they're like, "Oh my God, I'm not anxious anymore." And then, you know, you're less likely to get nausea and morning sickness, etc.
Please tell me, what are the best plant proteins that one can eat?
So lentils, chickpeas. I do like tofu, but try and make sure you get organic. If it's not organic, then quite often it can be sprayed with so many chemicals, quite often genetically modified and not that good for you. It also can act as a phytoestrogen, which basically means it pretends and looks like estrogen to the body. So it can disrupt your hormones if you're eating too much soy. So yeah, that's all really good. And just beans as well, if you can tolerate them. But I am very partial to an egg, and I'm sorry for anyone who doesn't eat eggs, but I eat 3 or 4 eggs every single day.
Do you think that that's like a really good source of protein?
Yeah, it's so other than eating liver, which I know most people will be like, what? It is the best source of, well, it's basically nature's multi-nutrient. It's got pretty much every single nutrient you need to sustain a life, but also can really help with deficiencies and blood sugar imbalance and everything. They're amazing.
Great. And I just want to, I know we've kind of gone on to speak about the 12-week period and, you know, if and when you've conceived, but let's just go back to the emotional aspects of trying to conceive and any tips that you have for families protecting their emotional health, because you obviously know this with your clients, but if you've been trying for a really long time, it can be everything you think about and it can consume everything, right?
I really recommend, again, taking time in nature as well and just reconnecting with like the world outside of you is so powerful. Maybe get a therapist if you feel like you need to kind of express yourself and talk about things, because, you know, it can be difficult if you're, you know, especially with your partner at home and you're starting to maybe get a bit of friction and it's difficult and this emotional weight between you could be like causing, you know, issues. So, you know, maybe look at getting a therapist, talk to different people. There's also quite a lot of circles out there, like women's circles, where you can find other people that have been struggling and, you know, they're free. You can look them up easily online. Really good. I've got a few clients that have gone to those. And acupuncture as well is something that's really, really powerful too. But don't be afraid to talk about it. I think it's really, really good to just share with your friends as well, if you feel like you've got a couple of people that you can rely on, because, you know, you don't want to be alone in this process.
I think that's also why I was so open with my miscarriage, is that I think so often we go on social media and we hear all about the conceptions and the happy pregnancies and the healthy pregnancies, and then we just feel like it's us, like we can't conceive, we're going through this awful journey, and then when you see other people you're like, wow, like suddenly you just feel like there's other people. So actually you're right, just talking about it, sharing. There's so many online platforms. Reddit is a great one for people sharing. I think in our modern day society, we can exert control over a lot of things, right? And I know when I was trying to conceive, even though it didn't last too long, I remember feeling frustrated that I couldn't control it. I'm pretty relaxed. I am go with the flow. I don't feel I need to control many things in my life. But maybe when you want something so bad, you feel like, why can't I have this like now? Like, you know, and is there an element of just saying, let go? Yes, yeah. I can get myself in optimal health. Yes, I can get the relationships if that's what I want to do. I can check my fertility. I can go through all of these things. But ultimately, like, how much control do we really have of something so mysterious?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask, I'm a bit of a control freak, to be honest.
How are you?
So for me, you know, making sure that I was like eating the right things, as you just mentioned, for me was like really, really powerful. And, you know, not in a restrictive way, in an abundant way. You know, it's not like going on a crash diet. This is like, how can I nourish myself in the best way possible? And that is also, you know, making sure that I took time off from work and, you know, we went on a few weekends away, for example, just to kind of remember that there is life outside of what you're trying to do, trying to stay relaxed. But yeah, it is a hard one.
I'm kind of that type of person that would start to think about what if it didn't happen, just because then I'm mentally sort of prepared for anything. And even though it didn't take me long, I did sort of go through the motions of like, what if this doesn't happen? And I found that a really empowering exercise. Yes. To know that I would be okay. We would be okay. Obviously, we're blessed to have one child, Juniper,
And if I didn't have her, that intensity of those feelings and how I process that would look different. I probably would go, oh my God, like I can't have children. It would, you know, so I appreciate that I'm saying that from only my unique perspective for anyone listening who's in, you know, who doesn't have any children is like, well, you do have a child, but just playing out like, you know, what if this doesn't happen? Like what could I do? What would I do? And I actually thought I would adopt, like I would adopt one. And suddenly just thinking that through, I thought that's actually quite cool. And like, you know, there's children already that exist that want the love of a family. And yes, it's complicated. I'm not saying you just go and adopt and it's easy. Of course, it's going to be complicated. But I found just going through that thought process empowered me to realize that, okay, if this doesn't work out for whatever reason, we will be okay. And something new will emerge because of this.
You know, my husband and I, we had those conversations before we started trying, you know, months before we started trying. As soon as I got my diagnosis, I was like, okay, what are we going to do if this doesn't work, which it might not. And so I think at that point, you know, there was less pressure on it. So we were lucky that we had that conversation early, and we literally wrote down the options so that we would come back to it and they were there on a page before it got like emotional, you know, and too stressful. But definitely having those conversations.
That's such a good idea. Write down option, you know, option A, B and C. Exactly. And then you start to see, okay, this doesn't mean life's over. It just means that it could look different. And then you might release control and then, you know, body says, well,
exactly.
You just, well, or not, right? Yeah, or not. Like the reality is that some people can't have children. And obviously that is devastating. But then who knows, you might then adopt and then look back and go, thank goodness, like we've got this amazing child. Who knows? Things make sense backwards, don't they, sometimes? Yeah, I found that with this miscarriage. I was like, this is going to make sense backwards. And it already does. Like it already is. It was already making sense, even though it wasn't long ago. So CJ, what is the one thing that you want to leave people with today?
Remember that it's not just you and that your partner needs to be as invested in this, you know, health-wise as you are. And I think that's so important because, you know, a lot of people feel like, you know, it's something I did. And also educate yourself on your menstrual cycle. It is so, so, so important. And, you know, it can open so many doors to understanding yourself, your body, everything. It's so empowering. So those two things together, you know, can make a huge difference to your chances. So please do those things.
Amazing. And for the people listening that are thinking, I want to work with her, where can people find you and what do you do to specifically help people trying to conceive?
I'm mostly on Instagram, which is CJ_health coach. And I basically work with people often if they're coming off contraception or if they are wanting to freeze their eggs or if they have had a baby in the past and they're struggling again, you know, so many different scenarios. What I do is I usually work with people for a number of months and we just slowly increase healthy habits that can completely overhaul how they feel, you know, mentally and physically, and, you know, get their cycles in a healthy place and get reconnected to their bodies and, you know, get them in the best physical and mental position possible whilst they're trying to conceive for their children.
Amazing. And I can imagine just having someone externally to walk you through the journey of trying to conceive would be really reassuring.
Yeah. I mean, I've used my own, you know, health practitioners in the past. And I think one of the most powerful things is to have somebody to talk to and listen to you, because that's so often what doesn't happen in our system is, you know, we've got a 15 minute slot and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And to help you feel less alone, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, it's been such a good conversation. Thank you. I'm going to leave your links. Obviously, you're just about to go and have a baby, which is amazing.
Well, actually, I've got a resource as well. I should mention that I've got a free download, which is the best foods for fertility, so that we can share that as well. So you can get
lovely, lovely. I hope your birth goes amazingly well. I know you did the Birth Box program, which is super cool.
I'm obsessed. Yeah.
put the affirmations on.
Yes.
Oh, it's been lovely. Thank you so much. And honestly, I just wish you all the best for your life with your baby and your birth.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've loved it.